Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening, Jim Jarvis here, along with your co-host, Han Tron. Han, how are you?
I am doing great, Jim. How are you?
Excellent. Doing very good. Well, welcome to tonight's Straight Talk episode number 31, titled Seven Things to Jumpstart Your Office Remodel. Now, the items that we're going to talk about tonight don't always are not totally exclusive to remodel, could affect a new build. But in essence, a majority of it is going to be talking about the remodel process or the redesign of a space. So we've talked about numerous things that we like to do in the pre-design phase. Go back to a lot of those episodes. Obviously, if you want to catch one of our previous podcasts, you can do that on our website, www.hjtdesign.com. Or, of course, if you'd like to call in and ask a question of us, you can catch us on the call-in number of 657-383-1442. But like I said, you know, there's questionnaires, there's checklists, there's forms. We have our own specific questionnaire form that we like to send out for the doctors to prepare to help us get a better understanding or definition about what they want to do to help navigate through this process of designing or remodeling. And those make great foundations. But really tonight, we want to talk about what you need to specifically do to jumpstart that redesign process with seven specific, we want to call them factors or areas that you want to be able to at least have an understanding about and give that to your design team. So the first area, and there's many ways to look at this, but the first area here is really to clearly define the purpose of your remodel or redesign. Han, we've talked about this at length, and you know, there has been so many things that have been said. I'm sure you see a ton of it on Dentaltown, on the forums, about why and where and what. But what would you say to the doctors to be able to say, okay, how can you define the purpose of what you're going to do?
Well, Jim, I think there's a number of reasons that you know, that will at least prompt a doctor to consider a renovation or a remodel. Well, one is if you happen to acquire whether you're young, old, or established, and you manage to acquire an existing practice, for instance. It's been around for a decade or two, and you want to refresh it, okay? That's basically a facelift, you know, new carpet, new flooring, new paint, you know, that minor stuff. That's not what we're talking about, okay? When we're talking about renovation, you're actually moving walls, changing the physical aspect of the interior of the office. It could be, you know, it could be an existing office that somebody had. It uses old technologies or old processes, and you want to update it. Whether it's technologies or how the space is used, but in essence, it's moving and physically altering that existing space.
And the reason why you do that would be things like, well, I need to adjust my current space to fit my long-term goals. Because let's say maybe they physically don't fit your long-term goal, and it's something you need to accomplish.
Jim, it could simply be you got too much space and you want to add more clinical space. You know, reevaluating how you use the space to get more bang for your bucks.
Yeah, exactly. It could be that you've gotten to the point now that, you know, you don't want to work that 60 or 70 hour week. And at the same time, you still your patient base has grown very nicely, and it's time to bring on that associate or associates, and that, you know, do the swing shift kind of thing that Bill has talked about, where you're open in the evenings, multiple days, some weekends on multiple days, and let your associates take those time slots. You pick the time slots where you want to work. So you're basically adding a new process of allowing your time for your patients to be within the chair. Now, at the same time, it could be that you're adding new services. So let's say you're bringing in a new aspect to your practice, sedation dentistry, you name it, whatever it might be. And you need to have special equipment, spaces, facilities for that particular service. It could be something as simple as, hey, I want to grow my patient base, and I've defined that by doing this particular thing, I can grow my patient base. But be able to do that particular thing, I need to identify and make some changes to my space. So that's the kind of stuff we're talking about. You know, it's really mostly making your space more suitable for your current needs. And this is a written kind of information. It's not where you take a floor plan or a drawing and start sketching down on you might have some sketches on a napkin or something like that, but it's not at that point. This is really the written down terminology to say, hey, I want to do this. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I want to do this, or I want to do that, or I want to be able to be in a position to add, you know, two associates. How do I fit them in? Well, that's the question for the design team.
It's more, why do you want to renovate? That's the bottom line.
Right.
Why do you want to renovate? And then, you know, your team could help you with how and what, but mainly
exactly.
You have to define why is it that you want to renovate. And this renovation could simply also mean expanding your physical footprint. In other words, if you're just busting at the seam and you don't have any, you need additional clinical space and the adjacent space become vacant, you can expand into that. So this includes that discussion as well. Right, Jim?
Right. So exactly. And so write that down, have that in a specific format that you can give to and discuss directly with your design team. And we'll talk about that a little bit more when we get through some of these other steps. Well, the next step or the next item that we really think is quite important is you need to identify your personal work habits, but also identify the work habits of your partners, associates, and staff. Because, as Bill would say, there's always room for improvement. There's always room for things to get better. And really, it's the old adage, don't we say, Han? You know, work smarter, not harder.
That's right. Work smarter.
Yeah, exactly. So, but there are times that your specific facility might be hindering your work habits and making it so that you have to do some things. And that could be something as simple as you have to make 5 extra steps to get from point A to point B because of the way your facility is laid out. Now, that might seem very, very minor, but multiply it. Multiply it, you know, 10, 15, 20 times a day. How many days of the week? How many weeks out of the year?
Years. Yep. Here's a good example, Jim. And you know, it's not just so much how you work, but it's that you look at the overall, what it is that you're trying to improve. For instance, been into a facility where you go, well, you have to go through the lunchroom to get to the PAN unit. You go like, why? Because that's the way it was. Yeah, that's the way it was laid out when I bought the.
That's what I bought. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, and so the renovation. What part of your renovation could the why is, to improve the efficiency. Okay, because you don't want to have your staff sitting there having lunch or taking a break. Well, you take a patient to the lunchroom to get the x-ray, or the bite wing. So that, how you work, what improvement do you need so that it improves the entire process of how things are done in your office more efficiently.
Right. And so the things you're going to want to identify is, how many patients do you see an hour? How is your physical space affecting you? And, you're there every day, all the time. You can identify where a lot of those things are. And how does that relate to your dental partners? And how does that relate to your staff? Another prime example, let's talk about staff. A new patient comes in the door. They're greeted. They're picked up at the lobby. And then they're taken to the operatory, whether it's a hygiene visit or whether it's a procedure. But they need to use the restroom. Well, if the restroom is not in the right location in that process, let's say the restroom is in the far back corner of this building, you have to then take that patient all the way back to the far corner of the building before you transit them into the operatory. Whereas in the better location for that would be, of course, to have a restroom that's on that path from waiting lobby area. We don't like to call it waiting room because you don't want them waiting. So the lobby area to the operatory. Now that again might seem trivial, but add it up. How many minutes are lost because of that extra transitions time? And the distance it's caused, and how does that affect the relationship and the workings of the rest of the staff when they're trying to move about the space? Now, big spaces are great, but sometimes too big of a space is not the greatest, just for that same reason. You've got to walk a country mile to get between point A and point B, and if you're the one that's hoofing it back and forth, that takes time. And again, that same kind of time adds up. And that's, that's just the interrelationship of your technician and the patient. Then there's also the relationship between you and the patient, you and your staff. What do you have to do? What do you have to do to go from, let's say, your office space to the hygiene room to do a check? And what do you have to do from your office space to get to the procedure room for that particular procedure? And then how do you then transition between, let's say you're in a clinical op, and then you got to go over and do an exam. How does that work? So all of those things need to be identified, and that really comes down to your habits about how you work. So write this kind of stuff down and be able to discuss it and review it with your design team. Thoughts about that,
Hunt? Yeah, absolutely. It does help. I think the human habit is that we are so resilient that we adapt. Okay, we adapt instead of finding ways to fix it and look at the long term benefit from it. For instance, we did a small office for an odontist, and it went to a fire. He'd been there for 15 years. He probably had another 10 years before he retired. So he went to a fire, and he had one of the local supply company do a layout, and basically all they're going to do is just duplicate the exact same thing. So you need an architect involved, and that's where we came in. And the question we asked is, well, what have you been griping about or want to that have been annoying you for the last 15 years that you want to fix, because this is the opportunity. It's almost like starting out fresh. It will be an unfortunate thing to repeat the same thing when you have the opportunity to fix it. And you have that discussion with your team, you have that discussion with your architect, and they'll come up with the solution. We actually ask the question, what is it that you wish? Because this is a building a space that needs to be renovated and brought back to life. So what is it that you need to improve, and why you need to improve it, and so on? And I'm glad that we had that discussion, because the improvement, there was definitely improvement needed. But have that discussion. What is it? Why you do it, and what is it you want to achieve out of that whole process? Jim?
Yeah, exactly. And that's really the crux of it. Based upon what you want to achieve, which is item number one, to what your personal habits, meaning how do you function, how does your staff function, and how does your associates function? And how do they relate to each other? And it's very important that you involve the staff and the associates. You need to understand what they're doing on a day-to-day, an hour-to-hour basis, and ask them the question. What do they want to improve, or what do they want to adjust to make their experience easier?
Let me add a little bit to that. Yeah, Jim, add a little bit to that staff discussion. Your staff is part of the team. They live there with you on a daily basis too. So it certainly give them a sense of ownership if you solicit their input. However, in my opinion, do not make the mistake that to give them full ownership where their decision drive the whole process. In other words, because I have this heart-to-heart discussion with our clients all the time. In the practice, the consistent feature or entity in that practice is usually the doctor, the owner. Your staff changes. So you give them, if there may be a little compromise in what you want to provide for the staff, for instance, perhaps a private bathroom. If you don't have the room, then that's something they'd have to live without. But you have the discussion, and you weigh out the pros and cons and what you can do based on your budget, based on the space, and all that. Yes, we advocate to have staff involvement, but never advocate for staff to have absolute takeover. Okay, because
right.
it will drive your ship in the opposite direction, and it costs you a lot more in both time and money. And at the end, you don't get exactly what you need that you own. And down the road with a new staff that are totally different, you go like, I should have done this or I should have done that. Jim?
Definitely. Well, the next item is basically dealing with the issue of the codes, mostly the handicap accessibility code. Now, you know, your practice could have been designed and built a long time ago, could have been around for a whole bunch of years, and maybe it doesn't fall within the current accessibility code laws. And that could be things like doorway widths. Your entrance width is not wide enough to fit within the criteria and allow for a person in a wheelchair to access the space. It could be things like hallway widths. It could be things like ramps or lack thereof. Maybe you have some elevated areas, or there's a transition from your parking lot to your front door, and there's two or three steps that are there. That doesn't allow for an individual with a wheelchair to enter your space. So now's the time to evaluate those areas, identify them, and basically bring that up as part of the discussion with the design team to say, hey, is this something that I need to deal with? Is this something that should be looked at? It could be very simple stuff. It could be very complicated stuff. Sometimes, based upon where you're at and the abilities of an existing building, you may not be able to solve all of them. And then you have to deal with the issue of, you know, trying to get that grandfathered in so that you're not out of compliance. And it becomes more of a legal issue that you can get yourself into. But really the goal is, of course, to be able to open up your space to a wider pool of patients, for potential patients. Because if you're handicap friendly and can allow for those individuals to, one, have a parking space, two, access your building easily through ramps and those kind of things, be able to transition through and into the restrooms, the operatories, all the things that you would want them to be able to go through as being part of a patient, then that's going to really open up your space. And now's the time to look at it. What do you think,
yeah,
Don?
You know, I think you know, you look at your, let your design team assess the feasibility of making those kind of improvements. You know, sometimes it's simply moving a door. Okay, it doesn't have to be. Now, let's talk bathroom, for instance. It simply could simply be moving a door instead of moving a fixture. You know, and so have that discussion to see if it's possible. And is it worth it? In the most cases, it is, because you know you're doing everything. You're trying to pamper your patient. You're trying to impress them, but at the same, you know, but really you're trying to make the whole environment that where you work in, where your patient come in, more functional, more usable. Okay, that's the bottom line. It's not so much, you of course, you know, cost matter, but I think the process of updating things doesn't necessarily have to be a big major cost. Jim?
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't have to be a major cost, and it could be very simple, but at the same time, bring you big dividends in the sense that, wow, they really care. So they're going to the trouble to do this, that you really do care. You care about every individual that's out there. Now, the next item is a fun one, because it's actually you kind of would ask the question, is this the egg or the chicken? Are you trying to put the horse in front of the cart here? But it's talking about your budget. You know, try to determine what budget you would feel comfortable with, but at the same time, evaluate that with the understanding, you know, maybe sitting down with your accountant, with your banker, and identifying where you're at financially, so at least you have an understanding of, yes, I potentially can take on that $1.5 million potential price tag. Not to say that that's what the budget's going to be, but at least you have an understanding of where you might be able to accomplish from your already existing team. Because one of the things that we're going to ask once we start this particular design process and we go down through all of the your wants and all the needs and all the things that are there is, okay, what's your idea on the budget? We're, of course, we have a process where we do a design layout based upon all of the things that you fill out in your questionnaire and all the information that you give us. And then that design layout is estimated so that you can get a better understanding of what that cost is. Well, you want to be able to have that to compare with what that cost is going to be, or at least that number that's going to come in. And there's nothing worse than starting this whole process off with, okay, I need to do this. I want to do this. I want to add this space. I want to put in two more operatories. I want to relocate the restroom. I want to add a particular area for a pan unit, all of that stuff. And you only have, $50,000
$25,000. Yeah.
$25,000. I was being generous.
Yeah.
$50,000.
Yeah.
Not going to happen. More than likely.
And more than likely, we will tell you. You either
right.
need to borrow more money or print more money because it's not going to happen.
Or reduce the things that you want to do.
That's right.
So, but you need to at least have an understanding of what you can potentially take on. And then you evaluate that against what's going to happen in the design. So that it gives you the beginning of a budget, but at the same time gives you that benchmark of, all right, my accountant and my banker says that I can do this and that'll work. Well, that's really what that's all about, so that you're prepared to be able to be in a position to be able to move forward. And we can help you with that. There's many folks that are out there that we consult with that are very, very knowledgeable to be able to help you understand. There's great folks like Live Oak Bank, Mike Montgomery and his team that do wonderful work specifically for and with dentists. Go back to one of our podcasts where we interviewed him, and then we also interviewed his associate just recently, and she's just a wealth of knowledge that's also in one of our podcasts that, you know, those people are very, very knowledgeable and can be very helpful in helping it to at least determine and identify what you want to be able to start with. What's your thoughts on?
Now, Jim, question for you is that how important is it that they actually have a layout to work from than simply have a contractor throw a number at them? You know, I want to move this wall, change the carpet, change out the lighting. What do you think it costs? What is your thought in that approach? Because I've seen it happen a lot. You know, they go for it.
Yeah, you really never know what you're going to get from that kind of design process, because when you say, well, I want to do this and I want to do that, and, you know, contractor, tell me what you can do. He's going to look at it from one area and only one area, and that's how quickly can I get this project done and get paid and move forward onto the next one. And sometimes it may not be in your best interest for the areas that he's identified. And you know, if he doesn't have a set of documents, something to base his price around, he's going to make a bunch of assumptions. Those assumptions may not be the exact things that you want. And so it just sets you up to be in a position to really be stuck later down the road as you move down that process, that that's where we see a lot of change orders come from, that the change order process. Go back to one of our previous podcasts and we talk about those. But that's where those change orders come down, because the builder is assuming one thing, you're assuming another, and the two aren't the same. And when the rubber meets the road and you're actually building it, or it's actually being constructed, then that's when the issues come up.
Yeah, we look at the drawing. It's like a roadmap to the process. If you identify the things that you need to get done on a set of drawing, and you discover that the price of what you're trying to get done is exceeding your budget, you can at least say, okay, we can do this and that this year, and we can do the rest next year or down the road. So as long as you have it on, in the drawing, and identify, they can be broken down to fit your budget that you have, and then you can budget for more in future work. So at least you have some direction. Okay, we always advocate that you have documents that you can look at, that everybody can work from, rather than simply just, tell me what it is that you can do for me for $25,000. If I go into a car, a car lot and say, I want to buy a $30,000 car, they'll sell you a $35,000 car. It might not worth $30,000, but they're going to find a car to give you for $30,000. That's not the way to buy a car, nor is that the way to do renovation. You have to have direction. You have to have things in writing. You have to have to spell it out. So if you need to pull back, or let's say you discover that you have a lot more in your budget than what you plan to build, you can expand the scope of renovation work. And do some, right. And do more.
Yeah. Yep. A good quality consultant, good quality design consultant will basically provide solutions that are at a cost that you can afford, and they're not going to push you so that you get to the point that you have to go way beyond your maximum budget. They're going to identify areas that are going to be potential phase twos, so that you actually can at least get moving forward and have a plan to be able to do everything that you want to do. Because we've never had one yet, Han, where we had a client who had more than enough money to do everything that they always wanted. When we do have that, maybe we'll have a show just specifically on that particular project. But, there's always more needs than there is funds to move forward with. So you have to prioritize, and you have to be able to say, okay, we're going to do this maybe in phase one and do that in phase two. Or we're going to say, yeah, we don't really need to have that. I'd like to have it, but I don't really need to have it. And so that's the kind of thing we're talking about in this, determine the budget, find out what you are comfortable with, and be able to sit down and discuss that again with your consultant team, your design team, so that everything can start off on the right foot. Well, the next item, which is a lot of times overlooked, and most people sometimes in our business, in the construction business, don't really think about this, but it is adamant that you do, and it's: how will this office remodel and the redesign specifically affect your patients, both during and after the project's complete? What do you think, Han? How many times have we thought about that and talked through that with our clients?
Well, I think, let's say during construction. Before construction, of course, you probably have a good idea because it's old or it's inefficient and all that stuff. So it is what it is. But during construction, as you move forward with the work is that, do you want to be still seeing patient when the work is being done? It will affect your, you know, the whole operation to some extent, if not greatly. You know, it's so as long as you inform the patient that that things is going to be a little bit noisy and stuff like that for a few months or a few weeks or whatever the duration is, then they'll be okay. Afterward, once everything is put back together, the dust is clean and, you know, the new paint is up, the new carpet's down and all that, you will see a huge bump in morale, patient acceptance. You have a fresh, you know, a fresh new space. It brings new life, new light into your practice. That's basically what we see.
Yep. Yeah, and actually brings, and actually historically we've seen you can get up to 25, maybe even more percent increase in your patient numbers because you've done a renovation or if you've done an addition or a new build, that kind of stuff. It's just a natural occurrence. It happens, and you have to be prepared for it. But, you know, the other aspect that's very important to at least communicate to your design team is that, yes, I want to be able to be, you know, here's an idea. Yes, I want to be able to be able to see patients while this renovation or addition is going to be built. Well, that's important for Hannah and I to know, because that will determine a lot of things as to how we design for those areas. So, for example, here it is. You're going to be adding 5 operatories. But you have to do that, you have to renovate 3 of your 4 existing 4 operatories. Well, there's several ways to accomplish that. One, we tell everybody to go home for several months, and you let the contractor go in and just do it all. Okay, well, that's great. That's probably the fastest way to do it. But what happens is you're not making money for several months. Your staff isn't employed for several months. So you come to the team and say, no, I want to be able to continue to see my patients and keep a workload going, but I want to do this project. I want to add those operatories, and I want to then renovate the existing. Well, naturally, what Han and I would look at, we would say, all right, we need to do this in 2 parts, not phases, but 2 parts but of one particular project. The first part is that you'd want to, we design it so that you could build the additional operatories. And that's done totally exclusive, so that it's separated from your existing space and has no impact on what you're doing. On a day-to-day, you're seeing patients day-to-day, everything's great. The addition's being built. The contractors in general and subcontractors are moving in and out of the space from a different area. They don't even come through your existing space. That's the proper way to do it. And when they get to the point that they're done, we've designed it in such a way that an opening is created, and that then they can enter into, or at least that's how you would transition back and forth between the new space and the old space. So then once that happens, then you would move into the new space, see your patients in that new area, and then the contractor and subcontractors would then schedule and work around the existing space and renovate that existing space. Typically, that wouldn't take as long as the new build would do, but that would be a scenario of how we would accomplish to solve your need to be able to say, I want to continue to see patients within and during the design process and the construction process, so that you can turn around and say at the end of the day, when everything's all done, I'm up and running with my total operatories and everything is accomplished. Now, a lot of times it's the determination is that really can't happen that way. And then it means, well, maybe I have to make the decision that I'm actually going to move my space to another location. So I do all the work, I do everything off site, And that determines that, yes, that's the best way to accomplish this. And then you pick up over the weekend and move staff over. And Monday morning, you're up and running in the new space with all the new operatories. On?
Jim? Yeah, here's two scenarios, and Jim just covered that too. In a renovation, ideally is that you can stay open and work with no interruption. Okay, you're going to hear the construction noise and stuff like that. We have not encountered a single project yet where you renovate without a minimal downtime. In other words, like Jim was talking about, you were saying that if you expand into a space and that space being built, and then at that point where you're ready to merge the two spaces together, there is areas of the office that need to be merged physically. It's going to interrupt so much that you won't be able to actually see patients, where you may have to shut down for a couple of weeks to do that final, you know, the final merge. Okay, so that's the process. Knowing the desire to stay open, it allows your design team to stage the work. It allows your construction team to plan their work and schedule their work, and that way it minimizes the downtime that your practice will be down to, you know, that required to make that final transition. The other aspect is if you look at a space, you have an existing office, and you are thinking about renovating and all that stuff. When we know the program and we know what it is that you try to do, the objective, what you can and cannot do in terms of shutting down and all that, we have ran into a scenario where simply by adding on to an existing facility was not just a, it doesn't give you any more value and any more gains from the investment that you can get out of that practice and still meet your clinical requirement for the growth. So our recommendation is simply keep the facility and go and find another location where you can renovate, where you can build, and then move, or keep a facility and have two practices. Okay, communicate with your team so that way they can give you the scenario and advise you on the directions and the approach and means and method to actually get what you need without sacrificing too much. Jim?
Exactly. Well, the next one is actually we touched base a little bit about it, but here's where we really talk about what changes or what additions or what areas that would help you and your staff have a better workplace experience. This is where you get to your staff and you ask them specifically what changes should be made. Now, again, Hans addressed, they're not the ones making the decisions on what you're going to do or not do. But what you want to do is you want to understand what they're saying, where they're coming from, what things work for them and what things don't work for them. Because good staff will always want to get better. And if you can do something that will allow them to get better, that's going to make for a better work environment. That's going to make for a better staff. It's going to make for a better practice. It's going to make for a better patient experience, because that just naturally flows right from staff to the patient and the patient experience. So, you know, there's so many things that can, you know, it could be everything from little aesthetic design issues to functional issues in the physical space. It could be that the way this front reception desk is laid out just doesn't work. I can't function here because of this, this, and that. I need to be able to get up and go over here, but to do that, I've got to go around 25 file cabinets. And while I'm doing that, I'm not being able to interact with the patient as they come in the door. I mean, that's just one example, but there could be many. And it's just, it's crucial that you get your input from the staff and your associates so that you can have the opportunity, because right now is the opportunity, because you're looking at this as a remodel to open that up. Nothing worse than going through this whole process. And then somebody, when it's all said and done and they're sitting in their new area and they say, why'd we do this? Why, we should have done that. It's like, well, now you brought that up. That's great. We're all done. Doesn't make sense, does it, Han?
No, it does not. It could be really, I think there's a phrase to say, happy wife, happy life. Well, and I think in your work environment, happy staff, happy practice. If they have some ownership, if they know that you care, if they know that that you have their interests at heart and you want to provide, make their life a little easier, more enjoy, make the work environment more enjoyable, they will reward you by working harder. They become more loyal. They stay with you longer, and so on. We are involved in discussions and what you should provide for your staff, and you'll be surprised some of the things that I heard that you just go like, oh, smack my head. Things like they don't need a staff room. They can eat outside. I say, are you kidding me? Okay. Just little things. For instance, you have a staff break, a staff restroom. Predominantly, the employees in a dentist's office are women. Maybe put in a larger, make the larger, the bathroom a little larger. Put in a powder counter, for instance, where they can fix, dial themselves up before they leave at the end of the day. Little things that doesn't break the bank, but it let them know that you care enough to do those things because you can for them. Okay, you don't want to make the environment become so harsh or difficult that it's become a pain to work for you. All right, it matters. The design of the building, the efficiency, the amenities, all that matters. So the more, not that you need to make it into a Taj Mahal, but put a few items in there that add value, add enjoyable amenities for your staff. Jim?
Right. And the other area is ask your staff what they have heard, what feedback they've gotten from the patients, because they're the ones that are going to hear it. Most people will not directly input to you, the doctor, about a particular area. I mean, there's some forward people. Han and I are one of those.
we
tend to be very opinionated, and we'll say our opinions, and that's why we call our show Straight Talk. But the majority of people, the majority of your patients are not going to say that, well, that light fixture just, it's in a terrible location and it hits me right in the eye when I'm, you're doing your hygiene procedure and it's just bothersome. Or that diffuser up there blows air directly on me and I'm uncomfortable. I don't feel comfortable while this process of, my teeth cleaning is going on. They'll tell staff, but they won't tell you. So let your staff tell you what your patients are saying. And then that can be relayed to the design team so that we can evaluate what needs to be accomplished and what can be changed and fixed. And it could be very simple little things like changing a light fixture that's mounted on the ceiling to a light fixture that's mounted on the wall that bounces the light off the ceiling. And you do away with the total aspect of having lights up on the ceiling that shine in someone's eye. It can be very simple things like that.
Yeah, or you can change a different fixture that's still in the ceiling. But again, you are right. You're absolutely right. The patient, you know, the relationship in your office are usually the patient and your staff, not necessarily the patient and the doctor. Okay, their feedback of the things that they heard shared with them from your patient could help to improve as you renovate your space. You may take into consideration. Okay, for instance, your office don't have a beverage counter where you provide coffee and stuff, and your patients are more mature and a handful of them often say wish you have coffee. Maybe that's something that you need to look at to include. Get their feedback. It's important.
It's very important. Well, the last area, and I don't want this to come off, Hannah, and I do not want this to come off as an infomercial, but it's very important, and that's seek references for your professional consultants, your design consultants, us, for example. Talk with our other clients. Talk with the people that have gone through the process before you and see what it was like. See how they felt and what they would do to maybe improve that, but mostly what they felt like from the beginning to the end and how that worked. Because this process that you're about ready to go into, whether it's a new build or a remodel, it's a complex undertaking. And it's going to be more than likely expensive. It's going to disrupt your day-to-day activity. It's going to take a lot of your time, and it's going to take a lot of your staff's time, and it tends to be stressful. So what we like to say is let us sweat the details, but keep you totally involved in what's going on. That's our philosophy of how we like to do things. That's our words. Talk to our previous clients, and they'll tell you how the experience was. But it's very important that you do that. But not just the design team, but also everyone else that's involved. For example, maybe your lender, if you're looking for a new lender, if you are looking for a new lender, please get one that understands the dental world. Because you're going to get a much better experience and probably a much better deal. Your contractor and your subcontractors, if they understand the dental world and understand dental construction and understand what has to be done and the uniquenesses and the intricacies and all the little things that it takes to go from point A to point B and from the day that they can break ground or start construction to the day that you move in, they've done this before. It's not their first rodeo. And it's important for multiple reasons, but the most of which is, why would you want to have someone learn on your dime? On your thoughts.
I think it should cost them a lot more than dimes, to be honest.
And
Jim was being nice, okay? Let me put it in a nutshell. Seek professional help, okay? No, I'm not talking about getting a shrink. It's a process that you need to have people that has the experience. The knowledge and the ability and the willingness to lead and help you to make the right decision. You don't need a yes man or a yes gal, okay? Because you can pay, having somebody that challenges you that if they don't agree with something that you're thinking about, and they offer something different, ask them why. Perhaps their method or their idea would be better than yours, and vice versa. Okay, but the professional people that are involved in the design and construction that you ask to the table have been there before. They have seen a lot more. Trust me, they have seen a lot more in the design process and construction process than you and your colleagues all combined. So put a little faith, put a little trust in them, and ask them and allow them to put their skill to work to help you so that you get the best value, the best result for your investment. And it makes the whole process a lot less stressful. And, the more experience they have, the smoother the process would be. And know that the myth is because there are specialists, they cost more. No, I think you have to look at is that would it cost you more for the mistake you make because you work with people who do not know what they're doing, or would it cost you less to work with people who know what they're doing and they save you time and money and headache? Did I say that?
Exactly. There's a couple of things. First of all, expect to pay for good quality consultants and good quality team members. And nothing's free, and cheapest is not the best, guaranteed. Secondly, when it comes to the costs, here's a prime example. We've got projects, we've done numerous projects around the country. We've got a project that is going on, and the contractor is not that experienced in the dental world. He was picked by the owner. The owner said that's who they want to use because, his price was the right price point. Okay, we can work through that. We don't make that decision. That's your decision to make. We make recommendations, but we don't make that decision. It's not our building. It's yours. And this project, unfortunately, has languished on for a little while, months and months and months, longer than what it should have been. And now, from a price tag standpoint, sure, it costs less to build than maybe the second or third highest bidder. But what has been lost over those months? So let's say it's a 10 operatory practice. And we all know that you should be in, what, $25,000 to $35,000 a month on?
Yep.
Yeah. So let's say it's a 10 operatory practice. And you're looking at, just for round numbers, $30,000 a month. All right. That's 10 times 30. Is that 300?
$300,000.
Every month, $300,000 gets thrown out the window that you'll never make back. You'll never get it. It's gone. You could never find it. You can't work harder to get it. It's gone. And so you have to evaluate. You have to look at that stuff in that realm. And it's the same way in evaluating your team. All right, if this team can get me in my building a month earlier and I have a 10 operatory space, is it worth the few extra bucks that team's going to cost to make the potential of $300,000? And when you look at it from a business standpoint, the numbers don't lie, and it really makes more sense to go with the experienced individual and team members who know what they're doing, have done this before, and can efficiently get through the process and move forward and get you in there faster. Because if you don't, then you're into the same example, like our example we talked about, where the individual is struggling, projects being delayed by months and months, and the owner's looking at potential change orders because of things that were adjusted, some of which potentially were caused by him, but others that were caused by the contractor not really knowing what needed to be done. And so that adds up, and it ends up costing. Not anything that couldn't have been fixed in the beginning, but once you're already through the process, you've got to work your way through it. So, you know, really, you need a consultant, a design team, the whole team, including your contractor or your construction manager, who's going to listen to your needs, ideas, and questions, and let your design team create the optimal design for your project. Once you have that, you're basically set up to succeed. And that's what our goal is. Our goal is to set you up to succeed, solve all the issues, solve all the problems before you start your construction.
Jim, that is one hurdle to deal with the if the construction entity is not performing due for a number of reasons. Another one before you get to that is the design. There is no such thing as free lunch in America. Okay, there isn't. I so often see floor plan presented by supply companies that there is no possible. You cannot take it and build from it. That's the first thing. If it's not done in where it meets code and it meets your clinical needs, it meets it maximizes how efficient that space to be used and all that, you waste a lot of time. Okay. Yes, you got a free floor plan, but it's not worth taking to the house with. Right?
Yeah.
Start with a team that know the stuff that account for everything that affects your building. And then shop your equipment. Design is a part that could help or break the project before you get to the construction.
Oh, yep. Absolutely. Yes. So what we like to accomplish for tonight was basically you got a little bit of homework. If you're thinking about, oh, it's time to do something, these are the things you need to do. You really need to clearly define the purpose of your dental office. You know, go through, identify your particular habits, your staff's habits and your partner's habits, and get their involvement in this process. And again, you can write this stuff down so that you have it, so it's ready when you're sitting down with your design team to start off with. Do an evaluation of your existing space and look at some of those things when it comes to accessibility. And again, talk with your staff. How many individuals do we have that come in wheelchairs on a particular basis, or that have walkers or that need assistance? And have you seen or experienced any areas where they have difficulty? Identify those things. Determine that budget. Go through and talk with your team, specifically your accountant and your banker, and say, okay, what can I afford and what should I be looking at? Not saying this is what I want, is what can I look at as a potential? And then when you look at your office redesign, you want to see how it's going to affect your patients before, during, and after the project's completed. So that, you know, if you're going to decide that, yeah, I want to stay open, well, identify that and discuss that with your design team so that you can then, a proper design team can actually design so that you can accomplish that goal. Then obviously, changes and additions that will help give you and your staff a better work experience. So just really dig into it with your staff and ask them what they would do and how they would adjust things. And you can do that on a one-on-one basis, or you can do that in a group basis, or you can do it both. But get that input, because it's crucial. It's very crucial. And then obviously, lastly, please involve a professional design team and a construction team that understands dentistry and has done this before and has done it numerous times, and talk with the people that they've done it with. There's nothing worse than saying, okay, the contractor said he's done 100 dental offices in his 50 years that he's been in existence. Well, what was it like for the last five? Because it could be a totally different experience from the last 90, because the leadership of the company changed and the son took over for the father, and the father retired, and the son is nowhere like the father. We've seen it, have we, Han? It happens. And, you know, the son is resting on the laurels of the father's previous experience, and you get stuck with that. Got to be careful. Just really be careful. So, your thoughts, Han?
Yeah, it's all very good point, Jim. All very good point. Before we sign off, Jim, let me add one other item that I've been seeing or participating in discussion about design. Okay, and this is from Dental Town. There is a rule of thumb when it comes to having enough space or don't have enough space. Okay, there isn't anybody there's a few that would say, hey, I have too many operatory and I want to cut back. But in general, a large number of doctors say, I want more treatment room. There is a point of no return. If you have the clinical space you need or you want, and the rest of the space aren't worth anything, you don't have a practice. Okay, you're pinning yourself down into a practice that are dysfunctional, that are inefficient. So if you are in a space, let's say 1,500 square feet, all right, don't shoot for 8 treatment rooms, okay? Because where would you put your reception area? Where would you put your staff area? If you don't have the amenity for your staff, for your patient, you're in trouble. So be flexible in your design. If the space doesn't fit for the number of treatment rooms you need, find some other space. Don't try to put 10 pounds into a 5-pound bag. You're not trained to do that, okay? Even those who are well-trained will have a difficult time doing it. So make sure that the equation works. If the design factor, say, you know, X number of square foot for the treatment, you know, for every operatory, use that. Don't try to force too much into a space to get the clinical space you need, and everything else is compromised. It doesn't make sense. So be flexible in your design objective. If it doesn't work, and everybody that's critiquing your design say it doesn't work, maybe you should try to hear it. It doesn't work, or at least say it. It doesn't work, and then go find someplace else. That's it, Jim.
Excellent. Without a doubt. Very, very wise input. Well, hopefully that's been a informative discussion. Please feel free that if you have any further questions, you can get a hold of Han or I. Get us on our website at www.hjtdesign.com or the 800 number 866-213-1268. We're here to answer any questions that you might have. We really do enjoy this time, and we thank you for spending the little part of your evening with us. And we're just here to help. and we're going to look forward to doing that. We will not be having a show on May 7th, and our next show will be on the 14th of May. So look forward to hearing from you and seeing you then. Tom?
And with that, appreciate you spending time with us this evening. Until next time, have a good night.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.